ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
So Jacob Anderson's coming today.
I keep wanting to say Rally Ritchie, which is his name as a musician, name. Which he actually got from the Royal Tenenbaums.
I know, I only found that out too just yesterday when I was reading
the characters Ritchie and Rally.
Yeah, I didn't think about that.
Beautiful boy, I've always kept an eye on Jacob Anderson, I must say. And it's really exciting to meet him. I'd actually sort of done loads of research already because I'd watched Interview with the Vampire and I started looking him up and looking where his life's at. And so I'm really excited. Actually, when I was doing that, I was like, I really want to chat to him and ask
him
stuff.
Really interesting guy, I think, you know, because the way he approaches every aspect of what he does, I like that he has, we're going back to this tree analogy again, but I like that he has a sort of central tree and many branches. He's a musician, he's a writer, he's an actor, he seems to be wanting to direct as well. And he said in an interview that he always saw himself behind the camera, not in front of it. So I wonder how he ended up on the other side.
Yeah, and he's great on the other side. He's so good in Interview
with the
Vampire.
Really good. I've only just started watching it. I am now obsessed with it.
Yeah.
I can't believe I haven't watched it yet.
It's on BBC iPlayer and every episode is there to watch, and it really is that you just get, it's just completely sucked into this whole other gothic, deep south world.
And it's like hyper reality as well. It's like flooded with colour. And I like his artistry. I like his attitude. I kind of know his dad a little bit.
I know, of course you do.
Because he's from Bristol.
Of course you do. I'm going to talk to Jacob about what it's like to have funky parents.
Amazing parents. Yeah. I thought that was what you were going to say. Jacob, I don't know how you find it, but I love having an amazing parent.
Having an amazing parent.
I'm making Swedish meatballs, mashed potato and buttered, buttered garlicky greens and like white mushroom gravy. It's home style gravy. And Mickey is giggling like an idiot because it's her favourite thing ever.
I was just thinking, I enjoy hearing you talk about it as much as I like eating this meal.
It's just one of the most soothing things in the world. Nana's taught me how to make this with her mum, Moki.
I didn't hear peas.
All right, there's peas. I'll put some peas on. Okay.
Great.
I didn't hear peas.
So
everything today is about being cozy and warm. We've just come back from holiday. We've been in Kenya
for a month,
so we're easing ourselves back in, and we just feel like, you know, January, it's just like everything gets a little chilly on the edges, right? So we've made, Mickey made you this lovely chai, and then me and the boys have made you Swedish meatballs and mashed potato with celery leaves in the mashed potato, and then there's a white homestyle mushroom gravy. This is like Mickey's favourite childhood meal.
So good.
And then roast garlic and spinach. And buttered.
Today, we don't always do this, but today we're going to clap for the food.
We're going to clap for the food. You haven't even had any of the food
Nice teamwork. Nice teamwork.
Would you like to help yourself,
yes,
please?
Okay,
dear?
Thank you.
Would.
How do we avoid, like,
no,
on
we
the
don't.
Mic? Actually, no, I mean,
I've heard a few like
chomping
chewers. Yeah.
What on this or other? Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Oh, have you listened to it, Jacob?
Yeah. Of course.
Oh, that's nice.
I feel very honoured to be here.
Oh, thank we're you. So happy to have you. So you know, I kind of know your dad a little bit.
I found this out like the other day.
Do you know this? Yeah. I mean, we sort of because you're from Bristol.
I am. Yeah.
Brizzle. Right. We did Brizzle for a bit.
When I was a teenager, I was in a band from Bristol. Mm-hmm. So I was in Bristol a lot. And around the Massive Attack Boys and old, like, St. Paul's Carnival.
Yeah,
proper blues. Crowd. Yeah, just really when Bristol was popping, I have to say. Bristol was a really great place
to but
be.
Things, because of my mum and because of Massive Attack and all that crew, I'm really aware of how popping Bristol is and the kind of music that's created there and has been for years and years. Mm-hmm. But I don't think everyone understands.
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily a connection that people always make with Bristol. Bristol's a complicated place, right?
Yeah.
You said something really interesting, because obviously we knew you were coming, so I started reading some of your interviews, and you said something about Bristol and New Orleans having this similar ghost, like the ghost of enslavement hanging over it. But they both have this kind of duality about them, because there's the horror of that, but out of that has come this incredible beauty.
Yeah.
You know, the multiculturalism of Bristol is extraordinary, and the multiculturalism, that Creole, New Orleans, funk, music, vibe, food, everything from New Orleans.
Like, it's soaking, soaking in that. Yeah, but because you also get, like, the pain of a place quite often gets, like, highlighted.
Yeah.
It's like, this is what people went through here. Like, if you ask anyone in New Orleans, like, if you call anybody resilient to their face, like, people are like, no, don't call us that. We're not resilient. It's like an offensive thing for them to be thought of as, like, people that have gone through something. Because they're just survivors. They're moving forward. I've seen some stuff in that city that, like, you just shouldn't ever see in this world.
What
in,
kind
like,
of today, stuff?
The levels of, like, the wealth disparity is crazy. Like, when you see, like, a tent, and then you see, like, a fence around the tent, and then, like, a child's trike in the front, and it's like somebody's house is a tent.
Yeah.
It's real shit.
Mm-hmm. Real shit.
But it's also just this really vibrant, colourful, musical, like, arty city.
So what we should say is that one of the reasons that you were in New Orleans is because you were filming the huge series Interview the Vampire, and made by America, but shown here on BBC. Is that it?
Yeah.
American money.
I started watching Interview with the Vampire. I haven't seen it.
I told us to watch it months ago, by the way.
It's so incredible. I can't believe I haven't watched it yet. I can't believe it's so up my street.
It's so up
my street. That hyper reality, it's so beautifully shot.
Mm.
You're all incredible in it. I had it on this morning quite early, and a couple of people walked in and they went, oh, vampire porn for breakfast. That's great. And
it's an interest. That's a big morning watch.
It walked in. Yeah, it was a massive,
to commit to that.
One of the very big sex scenes going on, and I was like eating my, you know, toast or whatever, and doing things. They walked in and went, oh, what are you doing?
There is a lot of the thing is there is a lot of sex in it, and there's a lot of gore, but that is so integral to the story. And I wondered, with the gay relationship between you and, I want to call him Sam, that's his real name,
Lestat,
exactly.
Lestat.
Was that more in the Anne Rice novel?
Yeah, in the books they're like married by the later novels, they're fully married. And I think she reframed it that they kind of weren't in the first book. By the second book she wrote as Lestat, and she felt like she identified more with him, because Louis was like a stand-in for her grief. She lost a child.
Oh, and
she was writing this book in grief, and Louis represented that grief. The second book, she kind of rejected him a little bit because she'd come through it.
I didn't know any of that.
No, me neither.
Yeah, it's amazing. And the books are, she's a beautiful writer. She didn't have an editor, and sometimes you're like, you notice it.
You think she might have needed an editor?
Well, no, because actually some of those passages are like my favourite. They're really funny, or they're hyper descriptive. But
big lengthy monologues for you there.
Yeah.
Get on set.
Yeah. She basically decided that the fact that Louis was basically repressed and was in denial about their relationship and about the nature of their relationship. So by the second book, they were lovers, and they always had been.
Yeah, they watered that down in the Tom Cruise one, didn't they?
Yeah, it's really disappointing. Now, when you see that film, you're like, that would have been such a massive deal as well in the 90s.
Especially then, to do it properly.
But yeah, that's and Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise.
Yeah,
can you imagine? Imagine.
Yeah.
Wow, that's kind of hot. I'm that poor little Tom.
But the clothes as well, like, it just looks good.
It does.
And the style, I just thought it was a really interesting new way of doing it, getting into that deep southern, you know, the nature of all that pain and all that kind of gore and gothicness that is in the background of the South in that way. I've always been quite scared to go to the South. Did you film in the South?
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, we shot in New Orleans.
Yeah, like, for the whole time.
And I felt the same way. I was like, I've heard too much. I've seen too much of the South. As the plane was going down in New Orleans, I was like, I feel at home. Like, so there's something weird happening here. Like, I feel, I don't know if this sounds a bit like heady or a bit something, but
it's fine. She worships totally the moon. Don't worry about it.
Okay, all right. Well, but you know, sometimes you're just like, you just feel calm washing over you, and it feels like you can't really describe what it is, but it's just like a sense of belonging. Yeah. And calm. I really felt that, like, immediately. Strange. Like, at the airport as well, which is not even...
It's
really
strange
give you
to be somewhere so far that you've never been in the middle of America and feel that.
I know that you're spiritual. You have, like, an interesting kind of, like, what's going on under things and above things. And, like, that's everywhere in New Orleans. It's the closest I've ever felt to, like, another... thing, like whatever
another
else
plane.
Is going on. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. It's that magic.
Did that, because I feel like that sort of is suffused in your performance, actually, from the performances from everybody. That's jumping off the screen. I literally put it on and I just went, I couldn't even like stop watching. It's absolutely magnetic. I'm not just like saying this to you because you're sitting opposite me, but there's an energy about the whole thing that is like that. It's like it's got, there's something else happening. Right, it's not just a story playing out, there's some other drive.
This is probably a good time to tell Jacob about the Barbra Streisand autobiography.
I was ready.
Tell me.
I was going to listen to it because I wanted to hear.
All right. So Barbra Streisand, my name is Barbra. And it's the first autobiography she's ever written. And I've always loved her and always been enthralled by her, who she is and what she stands for. She's always been very clear about that. That's kind of written across her career. But to hear her tell her story, and there's a lot about magical thinking, and there's a lot about Beshert, which is meant to be, you know, in Yiddish. And I think that feeling in New Orleans, it's not just maybe a sense of belonging, but it's just like, I had it actually. I had it when we went to do the Caribbean show.
Right.
And I hung up all my clothes in Antigua and I knew halfway through, this isn't quite as magical, but I was like, I bet you I have exactly the right amount of hangers for everything in my bag. And then, wait a minute.
That's magical.
No. But then halfway through, I was like, I think I probably need some more hangers. Kane, can you get me some? Kane brought just a load in and it was exactly the right amount. It's more like sometimes when I'm doing stuff, like everything just fits into place.
Yeah.
It's Beshert. You were meant to be there, about to do what you were about to do, I think. That's what Barbra would say.
That's what Barbra.
But please start listening to it.
I'm into it.
The time is now.
We went to see Barbra Streisand in Hyde Park like a couple years ago.
Oh,
she was amazing.
That did happen, didn't
she? She was incredible.
Because Keith's been reading it. I walked right across the whole holidays and everything.
And sharing it with the group a lot.
Sharing it with the group a lot. But she was just so young. And there's just something about that kind of focus or
tenacity.
Being on the path and tenacity really, really young.
Yeah.
When you realize, you know, she's a funny girl. She was like, what, 20 something or whatever.
Yeah. She's so great. She's like, she's incredible. A powerhouse. Like, she, incredible. And she was a one-stop shop. What she was doing at that time in terms of directing and acting and singing and dancing and being that level at all of those things.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to talk to you about being so young and being tenacious. Because 17 is when you left Bristol to come to London.
Yeah.
Right. And I left home at 15. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what the hell I was thinking. On one. What was your mindset at 17 to leave Bristol and go to London? Were you just ready to work?
Like, I feel like I was always ready to work. I got my first job when I was 14.
Okay.
I was cleaning up hair. Just because I wanted to work. Like, I just wanted...
independence.
Definitely independence. Gives me some kind of sense of purpose and meaning to feel like I'm contributing to something in some way.
Service, yeah. Not,
yeah, yeah. And I really enjoyed those kind of objective tasks. I think now I understand more, like I understand my how my brain works better. And I go to therapy and like, I understand myself better now. But what I didn't understand when I was a teenager was that I need some kind of order. Like I need that in my life.
Right. Did you have disorder in your childhood?
Yeah.
Sorry to...
Yeah. I mean, Andy knows my dad, so yeah. I've got to be careful.
No judgment here, because when she's saying that, she's about to say, because I did. She's about to say, she said to me, I'm going to talk to him about having parents like you. Like what? No, amazing parents, you mean, Makita?
No, a total gift of a parent this person is, of course.
Yeah.
But there was chaos, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. I grew up in chaos everywhere. Yeah, it's interesting as well when you're saying about like London and knowing everyone. My dad less so now, but like my parents were are very social
people.
Well, and you're not.
They're both independently. I really enjoy being around people, but I get like I don't go to stuff. Like I don't go to events. I don't really put myself out there in any way. But it's like a fear thing. It's not like.
Did you used to?
I used to have to subsidize my anxiety with drink and stuff. Like,
yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you know, like I had to get myself going before I could go out, and then I wouldn't really remember any of it.
Yeah.
So I did, when I was like a teenager, when I first moved to London, I was like on a bit of a mad one. But then, like, I have lived a very different life now.
Well, I suppose you met your wife quite a while ago. I mean, you've been married since 2018, so you've been in a relationship for a long time, which domesticates you, and you work like a dog, it seems, to, you know, if you look back at all the things you've done. Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe that's just what fills your cup up.
I think it is. I kind of associate going out with, like, shame. Like, the next day, I associate with the morning after. More than I do the actual time. Like,
is that because
I'm destructive.
Yes.
Like when I think about the actual night, I was thinking about this recently with touring. Like I used to go mad on stage. I'd jump around and I'd I'd be in shin splints by like the third date of the tour.
Oh my God.
Yeah, like I wanted to do some like Bad Brains, like punk type show.
What do they call it when you jump off the stage?
Yeah, no, I used to do all that. I fell off the stage so many times. And I would like at festivals, I'd run like down the front row and I'd like high five everyone. I wasn't just thinking about it. I was talking to my therapist about it. I think there was some element of like self-harm in that, but you can do it. Like I could do it in a sort of safe environment. Certainly before I met my wife, that was what I was doing. I was like just going too far.
And when you do that on stage, though, it's a celebrated thing.
Yeah.
Because I really relate to that, actually, because when I was in a band, you know, I was really young as well. I was like 17 or whatever. I used to go completely, but not like literally standing, you know, on my head, rolling about on the floor.
Yeah.
Like literally me and Nana would tuck our dresses into our knickers, no shoes on, and just dance like
I
maniac.
I love those dances.
No, it was great. But there was an abandon that I needed.
Yeah.
I needed that release and I needed that outlet. But there was also something about there was literally, there were bits of it I don't really remember.
Mm-hmm.
Like it would be a little bit like some kind of dervish spin out thing.
Like an out of body
body kind of experience. And afterwards it would take you a good hour or so before you could really talk to people.
Giving yourself a job with a stage involved, isn't that what it's about? Like a place to exert shit and just scream and get stuff out and to connect.
I think so. I think that's kind of part of the, like, I remember the first time I ever went on a stage and that light hit my face and I just thought, oh, like this.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
What about when you do something like Game of Thrones, Jacob? Because that was it. I've realized that you did survived five seasons, 4, 5, 6, survived. 7, 8. Yeah. People get killed brutally, gone. Alfie, what did he last?
But he was very good at being that main character. That's a lot of work.
Did you get close to Alfie?
He's a lovely, I was going to call him a lovely boy. He's a man.
No, that's bullshit. He's not a lovely boy.
No, he's but a nice, wonderful person. Yes,
we love him to bits.
But tell us a bit about being on like the biggest show of all time ever. That's quite intense.
I know. I don't really know how much I ever reflected on it. I was 22, and I got cast in that the same week that I signed my record deal.
What?
And I was like,
what a week.
Yeah, it was a big week, and I'd auditioned for it like weeks and weeks and weeks earlier, and then decided I just need to focus on music, especially like here. You're not starting to change now, but like you're not allowed to do more than one thing, like without people dashing tomatoes at you constantly. So I was like, okay, I have to do one or the other.
Right.
And so I committed, and I was like, I signed to Sony, and I was like, so I'm gonna do this thing. End of that same week, I'm on the bus, and I get a call, and it's like, you know, you auditioned for Game of Thrones like 2 months ago. They want to offer you the part. And I was like, okay.
That's because you let it go.
This is complicated.
Yeah.
This is very complicated.
What's that thing, book a holiday?
Yeah, right, exactly. Right. Did you go, it will come back proper.
Because I remember when Alfie auditioned for it, and he was like, oh, I've got this audition in Ireland for this thing. And did you have any concept that it was going to be the thing that it became? Because it was a beast. Yeah. It was a beast of a thing.
Yeah, not to that extent. Because two of my good friends, one of whom was my flatmate at the time, were both in the show already. They were like in the first season, and the second season had just started to air when I was auditioning for it. So it wasn't like big yet, but it was sort of like bubbling a little bit.
Yeah, nice sturdy job, nice good role. Yeah.
And it was like a few weeks in Morocco. I'd never been to Morocco and really like travel for work. It was fun. But I didn't really know fully what I was signing up for.
You said something quite interesting actually, that the way that you made it felt more intimate, more small, but it became this huge, big thing. And I think, do you think that is maybe part of its magic? The performances that the actors that you all give are really intimate performances, and the relationships are very, very close.
Yeah.
But obviously the impact that the whole show had was so huge. Do you think that's part of the magic of it?
Yeah, maybe. It's like, it definitely was for me. Like, we were doing something really small until the last season. It was just me, Amelia, Natalie, Peter, Conliff. Like, we had this little, like, I'm saying these names like everybody.
No, I know you mean.
But you know, like, it was just
that's
that
little. That's how big
little,
the show is.
I know every single person you met. Natalie, sure.
But you never have the scale, Natalie Emmanuel. I need to say Natalie's
full
name.
Yes, wonderful Natalie Emmanuel.
Dream human being.
Really?
Legend.
Oh, yeah. I love that.
No, Natalie's real. You should have her on the show.
Yes.
Oh, we'd love to. Give her a ring.
I've seen her from afar, and I like her energy, but it's nice that she's a wonderful person.
She is. Good people. You don't have a sense of, like, perspective because there's, like, 30 people in that show. Like, Alfie, I met separate from the, I've never worked with Alfie on the show.
Of course, you're in different parts of the land, aren't you?
Shits in the night. And so it was always like that. There's
different
people
thrones.
I've never met.
Different thrones. Yeah. Quite literally, though.
Yeah.
I quite love.
Same affliction, though.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. The old choppy chop.
Yeah. We could have some chats.
I actually read a thing. Quite a nuanced similarity.
Your chubby chop. I read a thing that you actually had to explain to people that was in the show and not in your actual life.
Yeah, which is mad. Like, we really think.
Come now. Castrate yourself for success.
That's like, no, that's a TV show, people. Surely they got that now.
People don't, like, It's not that I think people don't actually realize the separation between reality and fiction, but just people don't want to believe it.
They don't want to think that there's difference.
Yeah.
Especially with Thrones, their heart is in that.
Yeah, and it's also just, you become like a symbol of something in people's heads.
Yeah. How does that feel though? I think if somebody is part of something, where other people feel ownership in that kind of way, and I don't mean that in a kind of mean way, like they feel ownership, but it connects to their life in a way that uplifts their life in some way or fulfills something in their life that's missing. Does that feel like a responsibility? That's quite a lot.
It does, but I feel like if you wore that all the time, then it would be too much.
So
like,
how do you cut that off?
I'm working on it. I don't know.
Excuse the pun.
But chubby.
I was like, mum.
thing is, I brought it into the conversation.
I know. We're like, not going to not discuss it? This. Yeah. Come on.
God's sake. I don't know how to get like the balance of how you chat to people. Like Makita, for instance, we have friends in common. But like when I was growing up, I used to watch you on TV and you were like one of three brown faces that were like, you kept me company. And like, I think as well, it's like, it's important to give people their flowers when you're here. That was so meaningful to me when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Not because I was like, that's what I want to do. It's not because I wanted to be on TV or anything. It's just like, the power of keeping somebody company in that way, and you were so real, like you know, like it was really important.
Thank you so much, that means so much.
but you can also, like, you disconnect because I'm sitting here talking to you and I feel comfortable with you, but like you also have somewhere in my being this like really important
role.
I
know what you mean. I completely know what you mean, because for me it was very lonely in that time.
I bet.
Because there was only me and June and Lenny Henry.
And Reggie.
Yeah. But I love that. Because I know how much that would have changed my life. And I didn't have that. And I'm the only thing you can do if you don't have it is to try and be it. But obviously not consciously. Yeah. But it means so much to me to know that I kept people company, for sure.
That's a really lovely way of putting it.
Oof.
I was a lonely kid as well. Like, and I went to a primary school where there wasn't a lot of kids that looked like me.
Really, in Bristol?
So, yeah, so that again, it's also like...
That's quite hard in Bristol, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mistakes were made. Let's just put it that way.
Oh, that's a good way of me saying I had a funky childhood.
You can say that to me next time. That's a nice way
mistakes
of putting it.
Mistakes were made.
There were mistakes. We were young.
Absolutely. Was your dad very young as well? Because he's 58 and you're like 33.
Yeah.
I was 20 when I had Makita, so clearly I was still trying to, you know, working out how to walk straight.
How are you feeling?
It's mad.
Yeah.
Being a parent.
I was gonna say, you're a dad now, you have a daughter.
Yeah. It's not that I ever want to like apologize to my parents. There are moments where I'm like, okay.
I get it.
I get this, I get that.
Yeah. Right.
This is a lot.
Right.
My daughter is my favorite human being on the planet. And she
I love your music. Thank I really you. Need to say that to you.
We need actually. To say again. So yeah, I used to train to your first album, Stronger Than Ever, particularly.
Yeah.
And Mum told me today she trained to
Bloodsport. Yeah. I love that song. It's just beautiful. I love the way it builds and the way the cadence of the lyrics, the whole thing. You're a really accomplished musician.
Thank you.
And then I looked and I thought, you've got a website, you've got merch.
Merch, exactly.
You're an actor, you've done all these records. I'm like, this boy never stops working. You are quite driven, I think.
Yeah, I am.
Yes. Yeah.
You're allowed to
And
be.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Were you able to claim that easily as
just
younger?
Just this minute. just this moment.
Well done.
No, because I've been...
Say it. I am driven.
I am driven. This was my thing. When I was a kid, I listened to music. I mean, like, you know, my daddy's like a aficionado. He has
tuned
like his
them.
Record collection is crazy.
Yeah.
So I grew up with that as like partially an education, and that was something that I really, like, he and I really connected on.
All the stuff that people think about on the top, you know, Stevie Wonder, Ray Charles, whatever. But then underneath that, there's this kind of deep rooted, because we came out of punk, and punk was a route into all these avenues of alternative musicality and theatricality and literature, extraordinary music, amazing theatre, and just artistic endeavour. And you said something actually about Stormzy that I thought was really interesting, that you really admired his old school artistry. And when you were talking about your dad, then I suddenly just remembered that. And I was thinking, yeah, because that's what's behind all of that. There's a kind of respect. People think of us as a kind of like, you know, just out of control generation. But actually, we were educating ourselves in a very different way outside of the confines of school or the parameters of a bricks and mortar educational system. We educated ourselves in a way about the artistry of the world and how much power that can give you and how tall you can stand and how far that can drive you. But we did it off our own back. So your dad was probably like all of us, like, digging out the weirdest little records.
Weird stuff. And also stuff that at the time I was like, I don't want to listen to that. Like, I'm not. And it's only later on that I've gone, oh, like, he was showing me some stuff that's like, it's incredible. As a kid, I was like, you have to be a detective. Or no, I think of it now, I was a little detective. Like, I used to go searching for things, like before the internet, you'd like, you go into the library.
Yeah, research, like a little researcher.
Yeah. And then like I would listen to Trevor Nelson's show on Sunday, but I'd record the whole show and then I'd edit out Trevor, with love to Trevor, I would edit him out, so I'd have like
just
a mixtape for the week. Yeah,
well, and kids were meticulous, like, weren't they? You had to make your own, so that you didn't even make your own little mixtape, start and stop, record,
start and stop record.
I mean, who could do that? Be bothered to do that these days? But it was important, those tapes, those mixtapes.
My daughter, like, I really want to give her that sense of like a little analog something. Just something's like, it's good to like to dig for things. We're going through a time where it's like everything is just thrown at you. Like, you know, the thing, like, we had it when my wife was pregnant, before she knew she was pregnant, we were getting like told about baby grows and stuff. And you're like, how
did they know?
What is going on?
What, did your phone pick up some hormonal change? No. Shit, that's scary.
But, yeah, and I don't want that. I don't want her to be led by that. I feel like that spirit as a child, it kept me alive.
Yes.
It kept me...
One's curiosity. Yeah. Actually, there's this film called When We Were Young. It's a Noah Baumbach film. Is that how you say it? Baumbach? But it's really interesting. It's about an older couple. Oh God, they're like 45. But it's Ben Stiller and Naomi Watts. And they meet a younger couple, Adam Driver and Amanda Thingamabob. And the younger couple listen to records and like don't use the internet and like make their own ice cream. And the older couple are like constantly on their computers listening to podcasts, you know, like living in what we've been given. And the younger people have retreated back. And they do this one thing where they're like, what was that suite called? And they're like, oh, let me look up. And they're like, no, let's just remember. And I was like, that is what's missing from today. Let's just remember. What was that guy called? Let's just remember. Yeah. Rather than, let me just look it up. And I think that curiosity drove my life. Mm-hmm. And you're saying as well, as a child, all of us. So I get what you mean, but it's like, how do you keep your kids curious and
get her
hungry?
Get her a set of encyclopedias.
Yes, she'll love those at three.
No, I used to love encyclopedias.
I loved my encyclopedias.
I know, I love an encyclopedia.
Because you have to go and get the right book down. And Mum used to take me to the encyclopedia and you get the right, you know, the right volume, A to whatever. And then you look it up and you find the pictures and you read what it is you're looking for. And you find out the information. Of course, half the information probably isn't in the encyclopedias now because they're quite old. I don't know. Do they still make encyclopedias physically?
Yeah.
Would have to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have to do that new volume. Like, you know, they do new edition dictionary.
Yeah, because then how would you put, like, algorithm into an encyclopedia?
Yeah, but it kind of... Oof.
So it's really changed your life becoming a parent.
Yeah.
And what does it make your future look like to you? When you think about family and the family that you want to build for her and what you want for your future, what do you think about?
I do think about her future a lot. She's like a performer. She'll like cry in the mirror and then, like, and then she'll stop crying and then look at herself and then like get herself back into a state of tears. Wow. And I'm like, oh no, she's an actor.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm like, what? This is a good time to bring up that your wife is an actor as well.
She is, yeah. So
right. This is a child of two actors. Come on. She's good. I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's what I'm like. I want her to be, I think about like, I want her to be in STEM. Like I wanted to do engineering and science and be into anything kind of practical.
Yeah.
And then I think what I really want is for her to be happy and find purpose. And the only way she can do that is if we leave her to do what she...
We'd probably let her be a huge actress that she's going to become.
Yeah, I was going to say, I hate to break it to you, but for the sound of that mirror shit, you might be out of luck.
I wanted to ask, I wondered with two actors married, because you still have to audition. For Interview with the Vampire, didn't you have like a lengthy 10-round audition with like, you know, the Americans, I can imagine.
Yeah. You really wanted that though, right?
Yeah, I did. You were talking to Zawe about following your spirit, and that was one of them. And I had reservations as well because I was like, Louis, is it okay for me to play? Is it right for me to play this man? And then you just get kind of a feeling. There was too much that we had in common.
You were drawn.
It was the beginning of that thing I was saying in New Orleans. I just felt really connected. It's like when you meet a person that you're just really drawn to.
Is that what it's like? I mean, I'm not an actor, I don't know, but is that what it's like when you find the role, when you read the part and you know that you're meant to, what is it, Nikita?
Bichette.
It's meant to be.
Bichette. It's like B-E-R-S-H-A-R-T, Bichette.
Oh, Bichette.
Yeah, Yiddish.
Meant to be.
Meant to motherfucking be.
Does that happen to you often or is it a rare thing?
Not often. I think, if I'm being really honest with myself, I think that's the first time. Right. It's something I've always got with music because that is my heart. Like, it's just like music is just me just going, okay, pulling out my heart. And I have a control over that, which you don't get when you're acting. But yeah, Louis, he gives me that same kind of feeling. I feel like I'm letting somebody in on something.
Ooh. Do actors revisit characters they've played? Like, would you, in your head, like go talk to Louis after a project's finished? He's quite a...
You can tell us the truth.
No, and I would. I would. I've been told I overshare.
Me too. I don't care. What does that even mean? I hate it when people say shit like that to me. It's like, I'm only trying to tell you half the truth.
Yeah, what do you
want?
What
kind of shit is that? Like, yes, I don't understand. I don't know what that means. It's bullshit. Yeah.
Please, overshare. Please do.
Share away.
Do you chat to Louis in your head?
Yeah, I do. And I talk to my grandma and I talk to my granddad.
And they're people that have passed.
Yeah. It's not so much that I'm like sitting there and I'm talking with words. It's like a sense of somebody or something being there. But yeah, I can say this, I think, without spoiling anything. And if I did, then exclusive. but at the end of shooting this season.
Series 2, yeah.
I had got like a handful of rocks from the Dubai set, and I put them in a little like pouch, like a little baggie, and I started to like spread them. Like I started to basically like spread Louis's ashes in like insignificant places. It was in New Orleans.
Dubai.
To make sense of this. But yeah, so I put them in like Louis places to say goodbye to him for a bit, you know? Because he's been like that show and him have been so much a part of my brain for the last 2 years. And I was doing that. And then I went to this park where me and my wife and my daughter and my mother-in-law, like we used to walk around. And I started to like put them there as well, which is like, that's not a Louis thing. That's a me thing.
Right.
But it felt way more significant than like where I was putting them before, like in the sort of like Interview the Vampire iconic places, but not, I don't mean it as
connected,
in like the show's iconic.
Connected,
I just mean
places, yeah.
Connected places, yeah. And I thought that was really significant, even doing this symbolic thing, which is not what I do. Mm. Like I wouldn't describe myself as a spiritual person or, and I was like, there's this weird place where me and him have like have kind of met and have become the same person, and it's a good thing for me to like
separate.
Yeah,
right.
Because Louis's like my messiest.
Yeah,
he's very similar to like me at my messiest.
He looks sharp.
Yeah, he looks good though. Crazy bastard. He looks good. He knows how to dress.
So Louis
Into the Vampire is you on tour, basically.
No, but again, like I was so, I never did that stuff.
Yeah.
Like I think I was thought like.
Let it in.
I was so tired after shows. Like I used to be sad. I used to be so sad coming off stage. Like I was talking to my wife about it the other day and she was like, yeah, I never really said it to you, but like, I could always sense like there was a, like a kind of emotional exhaustion that I'd have after shows that I didn't want to celebrate.
It's like a little death. Know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And always, I felt like a bit like ashamed again.
Because of revealing so much.
Yes, maybe it's that.
Yeah. And because it is, it's like, you're just going like, ah, you're just screaming.
But did you not feel, because I always felt like for it to be any good, it had to be that deep.
100%.
Otherwise it was bullshit.
100%.
So that's what I mean about this oversharing thing. What am I meant to, who am I? Sandy fucking Shaw. It's like, I'm on the stage. I'm going to give it everything. I'd rather be, you know, Big Mama Thornton's Rosetta Tharp, Sister Rosetta Tharp, Tina Turner. I want to give it everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't want to give it half a like little Mary Poppins thing. It's that's good, never.
But I know what you mean when you feel like you've let your mess out a bit.
Yeah.
But it's like, you gotta get messy. Because then you know you're living.
I think it's all right to let our mess out. The mess needs... I'd rather have it out than in. You know, you're talking about your therapy. I've had a lot of therapy. She's had a lot of therapy. Thank God for therapy.
Thank God for therapy.
Amen. Amen. Yeah. Amen to that, right? Yeah. Because then the mess is out and you get to process in a way that you don't have to feel sad afterwards. You don't have to feel like it's a little death. I keep thinking about the phrase guilty pleasure for the last couple of weeks and I hate it.
Thank you.
I'm like, why do you have to feel guilty about it? Just feel the pleasure.
That's right.
How can you feel...
So, yeah. What is that about?
You can't... It's too much of an oxymoron.
Yes.
It's like it's one step too far because you cannot feel guilty about something that
also, you're gives talking you about, pleasure. You're talking about a piece of apple pie, right? Oh, my guilty pleasure. It's a piece of pie.
I think about music as well. I'm like, if music moves you and you love it,
you don't
who
need to
cares
feel bad.
Where it came from?
Really?
Well, I don't know.
You can say that next time I whack on some Celine Dion.
Oh, God.
Look, no one said that someone else can't.
I don't have to be there.
Yeah, yeah. But that's not my guilty pleasure. That's just pleasure to me. Yeah. But that's actually, when I got to Antigua, I was lucky to go twice when I was a kid. But when we got to Antigua, the radio stations, oh, my dream. It's like Celine Dion and then it's like old school SWV with a bit of like Boys to Men
and then a bit Michael of like country Bublé.
And Western. And I was just like, this is my people.
And the key was like, I am home.
I literally, what's that? Michael Bolton was playing. I was tell me how to live. Yeah, it was good.
But I love as well, do you remember, like, I used to listen to these at the barbershop all the time. You have like, it's like a reggae version of like Westlife.
Everything.
Yeah. And you'd be like, whoa.
They used to get those tunes out before the original tune was even out. I don't even know how they did it. When we were kids, they would be out and then the originals, the actual singer would come and you think, oh my God, that's why I heard last week in the booth. So next up is the next series of Interview with the Vampire.
Yep.
Oh God, and I'm so happy that season 10.
More music?
Yeah, definitely. I've written like 2 songs since my daughter was born. I have like a self-consciousness about it. I need to just break it and say what I really feel. That's the barrier that I'm not broken. But you have to like feel like parenting is this exercise of sometimes you want to be like, just do it because I need you to do it.
Yes.
But you have to be reasonable and be like...
Not always.
Okay, let's talk about this.
Sometimes they've just got to do it. It's just because I've told you to and we'll talk about it later or not.
God, why does that still annoy me?
I think it's great that people are reasonable with their children and you explain as much as you can to your children. But sometimes they just have to do as they're told. You know, we are still having this fight. She's 39. and I'm 60 and we're still having this fight. Obviously, she doesn't have to do what she's told anymore. Really. Apparently. They apologize when you're wrong, yeah, because they need to know that you're not some like mountain that's, you know, never wrong, because then when you are wrong they fall apart completely. Mm. Apologize them, all that stuff, but sometimes they just need to shut up and get on with what you told them to get on with, because they are pick me and you are the big people. And it is that straight up and simple. You're four, go to bed. End of story. It's lovely to meet you.
It's so nice. I want to sit you down with my daughter.
And I want you to
this bossy bitch.
Thank you so much, Jacob Anderson.
Thank you.
So nice.
Thank you for having me.
Seriously, I'm glad you liked your dinner.
It was beautiful.
We're going to give you some to take.
Randell, what did you just say to me? He's very mannerable.
Mannerable.
And he has good brought up, see? That man has good brought up, see?
That brought up the appearance.
I loved the moment when I said, are you very driven? And he said, yeah. And I said, did you take you a while to accept it? And he went, just now, this second.
But isn't that funny? Because he's so achieved.
But why is it so hard for us to just own that energy? Like, I want it and I'm hungry for it and I'm driven and I just want to succeed and achieve and, you know, encompass everything that my heart desires. It's a very difficult thing for people to accept about themselves.
Well,
I don't know why.
Interestingly, I feel like he has put those feelings into action since day.
Yes.
But possibly verbalizing it is a different thing.
It's a difficult thing.
But if you look at what he's done and the way he's done it with his acting and with his music. So interesting that you said he got Game of Thrones in the same week that he got his record deal, because I always thought when I knew that about his career, was he consciously trying to do two big things to create a particularly kind of loud, visible career? But no, it was just Bashir.
Such a fascinating young human being. Brilliant artistry, I think.
Yes.
And I love the way he goes about the breadth and the depth of his artistry. The music, the acting, the writing, the directing, his parenting. Just the way that he approaches the world. Can we have more Jacobs in the world?
That'd be great.
More Jacobs in the world.
What a beautiful young man.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay.
Cheers to that. And yes. Can I say cheers to the mushroom gravy?
Oh my God, the food today, Mum. Oh, I'm so happy to share those mashed potatoes and meatballs and gravy with Jacob, because like he just said, as I was saying, bite him on the steps, he was like, thank you for making me feel so at home. I felt so at home. Yes. And I was like, that's the way my mum feeds people.
Oh.
And that's what you gave him, a big dose of home today. Jacob Anderson, meeting you today was
Bashir.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.